Thank you for tuning in to Hacks and Hobbies with your host, Junaid. We're visited by our amazing guests coming from all walks of life. We want to learn their story, their struggles, and their journey on how they got to where they are today. So stick around. Welcome back to another episode of Hacks and Hobbies, where passion meets profession. Today's guest is someone who doesn't just ride the wave of e-commerce growth, he engineers it. With 7+ years in the digital marketing and over 100 direct-to-consumer brands in his portfolio, Nikita Pokrushev is the founder of Aspect, a Nashville-based email and SMS agency that turns overlooked channels into seven-figure profit engines. If you're an e-commerce founder, agency owner, or marketing lead wondering how to unlock buried revenue without burning ad spend, this is your episode. Let's dive in. Nikita, welcome to the show.
Yeah, excited to be on, Junaid, and excited to talk about all things strategy, email, and how people listening can actually leverage this almost forgotten channel.
Absolutely. Nikita, take us back to the beginning. What inspired you to build Aspect? Was there a specific moment where you realized retention channels were being criminally underutilized?
I don't think it was something that I dreamed about when I was a kid, that I'll be running an email agency, but it was a natural evolution from having my own store set up at one point. So I started off with my own Shopify store, learned all of the basics there with email, SMS, Google Ads, Facebook Ads, TikTok. I think it was Musical.ly back then, but basically learning the basics of marketing my own store. And that evolved into me then helping my friends, my family, any acquaintances with all of these marketing stacks, whether it's creating ads for them, creating emails, that sort of thing. Then that led me to open up the agency and start to hire on talent, helping bigger clients, and then focusing specifically on e-commerce brands. And then after that, we pivoted into email and SMS specifically because it was one of those undervalued channels, and we saw a ton of success with email marketing from our clientele. And we needed to focus in on one specific niche because at that point, we were getting really burnt out by trying to manage Facebook ads, Google ads, landing pages, conversion rate optimization, and email all at the same time. So we really needed to pick a lane. And after that pivot, it made me really question on why it wasn't being taken as seriously. And I just went super deep into it, got a lot better at it because I was focusing on one thing, and it led to a lot more growth for the business as well as for our clients.
You know, when we focus on one thing, it gives our mind the capacity to think of so many creative ways in that one aspect. But when we're trying to manage multiple dishes at the same time or multiple locations, you just have enough capacity to put out the fires at that point. You're no longer able to think creatively. You're no longer able to try new things because you're trying to keep afloat so many floating or, balancing place and whatnot. So kudos to you, man. That's amazing.
Yeah, I was going to say, it felt like we were just always on our back foot trying to catch up with all these different marketing channels.
Yeah.
You know, at the time it was like Google was updating the way that you could send out emails, and then Facebook like the next month announced Apple announced iOS 14, which made it harder to target through Facebook. So it was like playing catch up constantly, and we were never really ahead of the game, or we weren't really evolving our services. We were just playing catch up.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And it makes sense. It makes sense because these companies, they're constantly going to increase and go deeper and create new ways to, again, they're trying to monetize the best way they can too. So they're going to continue to evolve. Plus they have massive teams that can focus on these things. So talk to me about, Nikita, what were some early wins or case studies that confirmed you were onto something? Were there any surprising patterns across those direct-to-consumer brands?
I think the biggest win that I could remember is when we initially pivoted into email and SMS marketing. This was around like 2021, 2022. And at that time, we had, I think, about three email clients. And this is when I was like, okay, cool. Like, we have Facebook ad leads coming in, or like these website leads coming in, but I had to say no. Unfortunately, it sucks to say no to money. But we had one specific client come on. Their name was Good Clean Love, and they trusted us to rebuild their entire automation system, their entire back end, basically. And we did it in about 2 to 3 months. We rebuilt everything, and they were making, before signing on, a couple $100, maybe like $1,000 a month with their automations. And after rebuilding their entire system, we saw an increase of, like, I think it was like $40,000 a month. So, like, it went from like $1,000 to $40,000 a month after launching everything. And it's like, they're like, whoa, we didn't have this. We didn't know we had this much revenue just sitting around. And it's like, well, the system that you guys had set up was kind of built to lose money. So now we're on the flip side of that. We have high converting emails. We have the proper strategy to communicate with any already existing customers, but also any potential incoming customers that need a little bit of an extra nudge to help them make that purchase. So it was a great feedback loop, and at the same time, it showed us like, okay, this pivot has like it's working out. We're seeing great results with this client, and like, how do we replicate this for any future clients coming in?
Something that you didn't say that's the underlying factor under all of what you've done, right? So you've revamped their system, you revamped their automations, and you're running these probably nurture campaigns through emails and SMS to the client list that they already had. And,
Exactly. Yeah.
right? And it's something that I think Frank Kern talks about, or a lot of salespeople talk about as well. The cash is in the follow-up, and you're essentially doing that with SMS and email retargeting.
Yeah, these were not new customers or new emails coming in. This was their existing list. So they were sitting on a gold mine and they had no idea. And you brought up that, like, the sales are in the follow-up. I'm more of a guy where you live on rented land with all these platforms, whereas you can also, if you nurture your own land with the email list that you already have and the data that you already have, you're still going to see as much success if done correctly.
No, you're 100% right. And even when you're on rented land, the more impact you have with the people in that rented land. So let's say the social media following, the more traffic they're going to send to you as well, because you're treating their land with respect, fertilizing it properly and doing all the things that keep people in that platform as well. So that's amazing, man. I love it. Now, you've said that brands are leaving 200 to 400,000 a year on the table by not dialing in their email and SMS flows, and I can feel that. That's so true, especially from the story that you shared. Can you break down where that money is actually hiding?
A lot of where that money is hiding is, like you mentioned earlier, in the follow-up. When I'm auditing, I think I audit about like 5 to 10 accounts a week. The biggest mistakes I see is just not having enough emails being sent out, or the emails that are being sent out aren't being sent out strategically. Maybe there's too long of a time gap between when they first are added to that a specific automation and then when they actually get the email. And that could break the sale, and that could lead customers to not convert. So a lot of that money is held in the potential of new customer or new, I guess, subscribers coming in. So with the pop-ups or the way that you get new subscribers onto your list is unoptimized. So like, that's the first step. We need to fix that, because the more people we have on the list, the more we can market to them and the more revenue that's going to come in from that list. The second is how we nurture that list. So that goes through like the welcome automation or a cross-sell automation, or even after they buy, a post-purchase automation. So all of that nurturing is what helps add those specific touch points. I'm not exactly sure who quoted this, but you need what, like 5 to 10 touch points in order to get a customer. So We want to add in as many of those touch points as possible in between the buyer's journey to gain trust with the customer. And what all of that, like the strategy, the timing, the pop-ups, all of that, what is it called? All of that is encompassed by the actual content that you put out. And when we have the right content set up, that's what kind of pushes the needle forward and gets that conversion.
You're absolutely right. It makes so much sense when you have the right amount of touch points. And I think it was a Google study, they call it the 7-11-4 formula or whatnot, which how many different touch points and how many different locations. And you're absolutely right. The more touch points the customer on a journey has, the more likely they are to connect with you. I was just watching a video where Gary Vee's talking to this. They're a cookie, they sell cookies and they've been using a platform called Whatnot. And he's asking, he asked him, okay, how much money are you making on a monthly basis? He's like, well, we're making 10,000 a month shipping these out, and we want more. And then he asked him, okay, how often are you going live on Whatnot? And they're like, well, we'll do about an hour to hour and a half every single day. He's like, well, you need to 10x that, do 10 hours lives every day. And then even if you have to hire somebody who's just doing these lives, and then you can easily go from 10K to even a $1 million a month, because now you have the bandwidth and the inflow. So let's go back to emails and SMS. What are some of the key flows every brand should have, but they don't, in their email marketing strategy?
I think it's not about the what which ones they should have that they don't. I think it's more about which ones that they have but need to be revised in order for conversion. Because like from my experience going through, if you're starting out, you need these. But if you're an existing and established business and you most of them are set up, but they're just set up incorrectly. So in this specific scenario, we would want to have them not only update the messaging, but also update the strategy that we're going to be doing. So the first one is crucial. That's the welcome flow. That is your first impression. So whenever someone joins your email list, you want to have that be as tight as possible because like first impressions matter. If you have a bad first impression, then you're gonna trust the brand less and not convert. We also have the abandonment flows. So this ties into all the buying behavior actions that tie into a conversion. So if someone abandoned site, that means they looked at the website, but they didn't look at a collection or they didn't look at a specific product, we'd want to follow up with that. If they abandoned view, that means they looked at a product, they looked at a collection. So they're one step further in that awareness funnel. They didn't just visit the website. They're actually looking at the products. They're comparing the products, but they didn't buy. So we want to follow up with them. Then there's abandoned cart. So another step down that ladder. They looked at the products. They added it to cart, but they, again, didn't make it to checkout or didn't make that purchase. And then that last one, which is abandoned checkout, that's crucial because they went to through all those steps and they're right at that finish line, but they didn't convert. And that is where we want to follow up with them as well. After they've made that purchase, we want to follow up with them on post-purchase. So saying like, hey, thank you for purchasing. Thank you for supporting our business. Here's exactly what the next steps are. So if it's a specific type of equipment or a specific type of product, it'd be useful for them. Like, for example, like with the Stanley, it's like how to wash the Stanley or like how to take care of it for longevity. Like any sort of tips and tricks or how to actually use the product. We also want to have any cross-sell flows. So meaning if there's anything that ties into the actual product that may be complementary or give the customer a better experience. Like for example, instead of having this specific lid on the Stanley, it could be a coffee lid or it could be a different kind of straw, like things that you can add on to the purchase that not only help you generate more revenue, but also help the customer have a better experience. And at the end of it, some other sort of notable mentions is any engagement-based flows like win back. So making sure that we're targeting the people that have maybe fallen off the list, haven't engaged with their our emails, and we're just checking in like, hey, like, how's it going? We haven't heard from you in a while. And then we also have sunset to like finally make sure like, hey, do you want to be on the list? Because we can take you off if you're still bothered by it. So those are, I'd say, the core flows that every single business needs to be set up and set up correctly.
Man, Nikita, you are making me feel a little like I don't have these flows in place at all, right? Like, oh my God, I need to have all these flows. But it makes sense, right? I've done so much work in the podcasting space that I have these touch points with my guests that are coming on, that are signing up. They know exactly what to expect. And then, so pre-interview, post-interview, I've got those things set up. But in the business side, I definitely appreciate the depth that you went into, the different types of flows that are important, because I have been a customer on sites where, I was thinking about buying a certain something. I put it in the cart. I'm like, okay, how much is it going to cost to ship? Blah, blah, blah. And I leave because, we all have such crazy days. And then probably in a few hours, I get an email. Hey, you forgot something in the cart. Do you want it? It's going to be gone soon, et cetera. So I love that those key flows, keep that engagement, keep that communication going. Now, let's go to some practical systems and quick wins. Now, if a brand came to you today with, let's say, 50K a month in revenue and zero retention strategy, what's the first system you'd build for them?
The first system has to be the subscriber opt-in and growing their list, because email marketing works very well when you have more people coming through the door. Again, going back to that last point of the more people you have on your list, the more you can market to them, and the more you can market to them, the more revenue that comes through. So the first thing is setting up a proper email capture system and having the right offer for that audience. So it's different B2B and B2C. Typically B2B, we have some sort of lead gen playbook, or it's like an ebook or a lead magnet or any sort of information that helps build credibility with the business, but also helps the customer get value. On the B2C side, and the e-com side, we want to have some sort of promotion. We try to keep it a mystery because that has been the thing that has performed the best. So like, claim your mystery offer, or claim your special offer, or claim your surprise offer. When we keep it vague, our monkey brains want to know what that offer is, and we're more likely to convert and see what's on the other end. Even if it's the same offer, you could still have the same like 10% off or a mystery offer. It's the same offer on the back end, but you're gonna go for that mystery offer because that's what you kind of want to see. What is
You
this?
try you're trying to close the loop in your mind, like, oh my God, what's the surprise? I want to know and wait to the end.
Exactly. So we'd want to first set that up, set up a good offer, keep it super simple, like headline, image, and then email submit button, and that's it. And if you're collecting email, or if you're collecting SMS with your email, you want to separate those out so that way one is on each step. Time and time again, I go into even like big 8-figure, 9-figure brand accounts, and they're running a pop-up that has like three or four different fields that you have to fill out in order to get that offer. And that simply tanks your conversion, because when people get overwhelmed, they're not gonna submit any information. So we want to break that up into multiple steps. So email step number one, SMS step number two, and then on step number three is when they get their offer or coupon code, or whatever your lead magnet or whatever it is. So that is probably the first thing I would optimize. And then after that, we'd want to optimize that first impression, because as soon as they put their email or phone number in, that's when they're going to go through that welcome automation. And we want to have that as tightly knit as possible to get as many people to convert from window shoppers that may have just like, hey, you know what, we'll see if I can get a coupon code. And we want to convert those window shoppers into believers into the product and build trust with them throughout that entire journey.
Dude, that's a really powerful tip, as well as a practical thing that we can all implement in our systems, especially the special offer, or the surprise offer, or the surprise at the end of it, or bonus and whatnot. Because, like you mentioned, our monkey brains or our open loop strategy that we're using, they want to close that loop so they don't have to ever wonder what's going to happen. And that's why I think when they say Prime Day is coming, you know, September 7 to 11, I'm like, oh my God, what's going to be available? What kind of deals can you achieve? And people rush to those deals or rush to those things for sure.
Being vague works in your power sometimes. So like it's important. Like any, I get those emails too. Like Prime Day just happened a few weeks ago. Yeah. And it's like, here, click here to see what the Prime Day deals are. They're not telling you in the email because they want you to actually click and go through and see and go on the Amazon platform because they know once you're on that platform, you're way more likely to convert.
Yeah, you're going to find something else that you've been thinking about. Or maybe you left a bunch of things in the cart. Like, oh, I forgot I was going to buy this. And boom, you're making a sale. Nikita, you've worked with over 100 brands. What separates the ones who crush it from the ones who just coast?
From our experience, it's been the ones that are so proactive, like almost irresponsibly proactive. Mm. I think where they're like, okay, what do we need for this to work? Like you guys are the strategists, you guys are the masters. Like we're doing a photo shoot this day. We're doing like content this day. Like what things do you want from us in order for this to work?
Yeah.
And the people that give us not only the distance for us to work and like hone in our craft and like aren't micromanaging and like, oh, like this little thing needs to be tweaked here or this little thing needs to be tweaked. I understand. Things need to stay on brand. The language needs to stay on brand. And like we do adjust for that. But the brands that are like, okay, I see that this may not be a thing that I agree with, but in you guys have the experience. We trust you. Yeah. So we're going to let you run the system and see what brings in the revenue. And 9 times out of 10, when we have the freedom to do the work that we know what, like the freedom to work on the thing that we know is going to bring in results, mm-hmm. it's going to bring results because that's our main focus. So I'd say the brands that are open to feedback and the brands that are very proactive about actually growing this channel, because most don't really care about email. They care about the sexy, flashy thing like TikTok, Facebook ads, their website, that sort of thing.
Man, that's really good. You're almost showing the balance between founder-led growth versus agency-led growth, because when they both come together, that's where the most growth happens, because the founders are inspired, they're activated, they're proactive, like you mentioned, and they're like on the go, and they're hungry for that feedback. And because you're working with hundreds of brands, you know exactly what's going to work. And when you guide them in the right direction, boom, you see those explosive growths. Now, talk to me about some of the biggest marketing myths that people are counting on, but doesn't really, you know, give that same kind of feedback.
Man, I love this question because I just put out a YouTube video on this like this week. The biggest one is more sales does not mean more revenue. Counterintuitive. I know if you're always running a sale, that means you're always going to be getting more revenue come through. But it really, in the long term, really messes with your brand. It does a few things. Number one, you're conditioning everyone that is following your brand and is on your list to constantly look for the sale email. They're not going to buy at full price. And at that point, after a certain amount of times when you always run sales, the sale price is in their head is now the normal price. It's like, why would I pay $30 more or $20 more?
Yes.
It just makes no sense. The next thing is it not only conditions them to look for the sales, but you're always hurting the margin of the business. Like it, like you're always operating at like 10% less margin than you can, or 15% less margin. So you're taking home a lot less revenue. Customer acquisition cost is very high. So there's a lot less coming in. And at the same time, when you're constantly discounting,
it's basically, so what you're saying, Nikita, is the constantly when people are looking for those sales, and some examples that I can share are Bed Bath & Beyond. They no longer exist because they always sent these 20% coupons, and people only went to use those 20% coupons. So your margin is now reduced, right? You can't make ends meet because you're selling everything, but you're not making any money. You're essentially a middleman, and it might as well be just an affiliate to somebody else's product, where you at least you're making a little more money with that. So you're absolutely right. When you're constantly doing sales, when you're constantly discounting your product, you're hurting the bottom line of your business.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a triple threat into not only losing long-term customers, but also losing margin all throughout that process. So you would want to reduce those discounts and provide more value-driven emails that help with actually convert the objections behind what your product, like that your product might offer. Like, it's like, does this product actually work? And at the end of the day, no matter how many discounts that you're going to be sending, people are still not going to buy if they don't believe that the product works. So if the belief isn't there, you can send me 100% off coupon code and I still wouldn't buy it, because it's like, why? Like, if I'm buying an acne cream, and if I don't believe that it works, then I wouldn't even want to put that on my skin to even try, even if it was free.
You're so right. Nikita, you've mentioned so many amazing things here, and I'll probably have to go back and listen to this and, take notes, because there's so much value here. Now, there's some big events that happen on a yearly basis. Amazon, has taken the philosophy from Black Friday, and, they're kind of applying it on a dual yearly basis. So they have Prime Days coming up, then they do the Black Fridays as well. How does a company prepare for Black Friday retention versus acquisition?
I think right now, Black Friday is our Super Bowl, if you want to think about it that way, because that is where you really get to leverage your email marketing list. Yes, there are like other ad channels like Facebook ads or TikTok or Google ads where you can advertise the discounts or the offers that you're going to be running. But for the most part, that is where you leverage that owned land, because you can mass communicate with your entire list. So I think right now is the best time to prepare. It's like middle of July. So it's like, why would we prepare? Like, November is only like 4 or 5 months away.
Yeah.
But hear me out. Hear me now, believe me later. So when it comes down to it, you have this weird buffer between July/August to October, where you can now look through your email system, see like where things are converting, what offers are working, what offers are failing. And you're able to iterate and do micro tests to make sure like everything is running properly. It's almost doing like a load test before you finally like put on the full load and the capacity onto what you're going to be doing through like Black Friday. So during this weird phase of like Q3 is where we want to have all of the optimizations for your flows, your pop-ups, the offers that you're running, as well as cleaning up your list for deliverability.
Yeah.
Now, after that, we'd want to, when we're running the actual Black Friday and Cyber Monday side of things, you'd want to first warm up your list, number one, to what's actually going to happen. It's almost like a movie trailer. Like, are you going to watch that movie if you didn't know what, like a general idea of what's going on? So you'd want to have like a movie trailer like release on the offers that you're going to be running. So big things are coming. Like, even if it's just like an email saying like, we're running a Black Friday sale, because some companies don't even do it. Like, I've met them. I don't know why. It's a lot of revenue left on the table, but you'd want to prepare. You want a teaser, and you want to hype up as much as possible throughout the coming weeks. We started on the first week of November and slowly ramp up how many emails we're sending before it hits. The next thing you can do is also do a pre-sale or a VIP sale. This is a great strategy because, funny enough, more people buy through the pre-sale before Black Friday.
Yeah.
Because we're offering a steeper discount, number one. But number two is people feel like they got an in, or like they feel like they're like, ooh, I just like, this is like a hack or like a tip. So when they feel like they're a part of something like, ooh, I got like one over on them, they're more likely to convert, even though it was manufactured to begin with. So we do a pre-sale, and then we slowly like lay things off a little bit. We do the pre-sale around the second or third week of November, and then wait a week, but still have like, hey, Black Friday, Cyber Monday is coming. And then we launch Black Friday, Cyber Monday, And then we go through that entire weekend and kind of lead it off from that Cyber Monday day till Friday. And that's when we usually cut things off. So it's almost like a month and a half experience if you really think about it. And then probably 3 or 4 month prep time to just make sure that everything is running correctly, because you'd be surprised at how many brands didn't do well in Q1, didn't do well in Q2, and are starting to pick up things in Q3. So Q4 is where like it's make or break, and we need to make all of this money to recover the losses for the last season.
That's insane, and that's crazy, and it totally makes sense. It's almost like when you're working on your marathon game, right? You're not gonna go run marathon the next day. You're gonna train, you're gonna work, you're gonna condition your muscles, you're gonna condition your body, the timing, all of that stuff. So you're essentially doing the same thing with email marketing. You're prepping all the workflows, you're prepping all the systems so that everything is going, and then you're actually putting that content out for people to experience and whatnot. Nikita, talk to me about what does the ideal retention flywheel look like for you, and how can finders know that it's finally working?
It's finally working when you start to have all of the different marketing channels work seamlessly together. I've seen this happen. I'd probably see the perfect flywheel happen a handful of times, but you can get really, really close. Like even if you're like 80, 90% there, like you're doing better than most of the brands that are out there. And the perfect flywheel is you have the email foundation set up correctly. Everything is working. You have email set up. You have SMS helping follow up with anything that email hasn't captured. And you're having a high pop-up conversion rate. You're having a lot of people join the list. And you're having email grow from like what it was, like whether it was like 10% of your revenue to now like 25 to 30%. So a big chunk is coming in from the email list. Now, what I've seen brands do really well is take that excess profit that they now have, so that extra 20 to 30 grand that's coming in per month, and then they put that back into marketing. When you do that, you have a lot more visitors coming onto the website. When we have more visitors, there's a higher likelihood there's more subscribers coming on with through the pop-up. The chunk gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So we see massive growth very quickly because they go through that flywheel of going through email, converting on the back end, money being fronted to the front end of getting more customers. More customers means more subscribers, means more conversions, more revenue, and then back and forth. And you keep going in a big loop consistently to then have a huge growth period because you have the front end working really well and then the back end helping support that front end.
Dude, that's so powerful. Thank you, Nikita. We got a really good feeling about this. I mean, email marketing is not dead because we all check emails literally multiple times a day to either look for deals, or maybe we're getting an email from somebody, or just to reconnect with a friend. So why not use that same platform to connect with your customers, connect with the people that are going to be your long-term clients, and learn from you going on. Nikita, thank you so much for coming on, man. This was a lot of fun.
It was a pleasure. Thank you for having me, and I hope the audience has learned something new today.
Absolutely. And we'll be sure to include the links to connect with you in the show notes for this episode. Thanks so much again.
Thank you.
Guys, Nikita just gave us the blueprint for unlocking hidden revenue through retention. But in part two, we'll dive deeper how to build a team that executes this consistently and how AI and automation play a role in what's next for e-commerce beyond just more emails. So make sure to subscribe, and I'll see you in part two. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this episode on Hacks and Hobbies. We absolutely appreciate your contribution. You can find additional notes on hacksandhobbies.com. Please share the podcast with your friends and tell them what you learned about our guest today.